Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang Podcast, episode 120. I'm Steve Borsch, and I am on with Tim Elliott.
We're rocking it out in Lakeville.
Graham Thickens.
And we're not rocking it out in Bloomington, but good morning anyway.
You're dancing. And Phil Wilson.
I feel like I should be kind of doing a Billy Idol sneer when we get that thing kind of going on there. So good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, nice hair, Phil.
Thank you so much.
You've got that 80s hair.
What are you talking about?
Duran.
He's got that Billy Idol hair.
He's playing off on the Billy Idol thing.
Did you spike your hair? He's painting a picture.
Yeah. Can you imagine Phil with Billy Idol hair though?
Oh God.
Listen, back when I was a top 40 DJ in the 80s, dude. So I had a rat tail. I had it all going on. So
God.
Oh, that's scary.
I know. Yeah, I know.
Did you spin a lot of Elvis wax?
No, that's it. No, the 80s. The 80s.
Oh, sorry. Well, I don't know. Maybe you slipped a few in.
That would be the 60s.
That would be the 60s, Steve.
All right.
And no, I didn't play a lot of Elvis Costello. So
I'm sorry.
I would love to see your playlist, though. I love 80s music.
Just try to think about, I was a night jock on a top 40 station, living the dream.
What city?
Let's see. I started in doing nights in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and put on a hit station there. So,
beer town.
And then kind of moved all over all over the Midwest. But let's see. When I first started, it was the era of Duran, Men Without Hats, Human League, that sort of 80s stuff. So,
love it.
Gotcha.
I still have all those cassettes, man.
Yeah, man.
Phil, you were hip.
I was happening, brother.
Oh, man.
It was happening.
All right, so I have no idea.
How are those Oktoberfests in La Crosse now? Tell us. I've never been to one.
That was back in the day when they were nuts. So, it was a lot of fun. Now it's a family event. So it's not near as good. But, we had a great time. Much beer was drank. Much old style.
No, there you go. Yep.
All right, so
old style.
So as the main host running this thing, now I'm trying to figure out how the hell do I segue from beer to MHTA recap. But we had that great conversation with.
They all got drunk at MHTA. No, they didn't even have a reception.
The next thing though. If we could have booze there, that would be good.
Booze and high tech. Yeah, it's a good mix.
Well, how about just Black Dog heroin? I mean, let's not fool around.
Listen to you.
So we had the great conversation with Margaret Anderson Kelleher. Overall, what'd you think of the event? What'd you think, Graham?
What did I think? Well, it's good. They work hard on it. They get good speakers. They have some good panels. Robert Stevens, always a huge favorite.
Yeah.
I got there in the midst of that. I missed the governor, calling for taxing on the rich, but then I got to Robert's thing. I thought it was good, and then some of the panels I thought were great. Social media was excellent, and cloud. We had a lot of cloud vendors up there pitching their stuff, and then. What was the other one I went to? Oh, I didn't get to mobile. I got there late. I don't know. Did you guys get to that one?
We were doing our podcast at that time. So that's
why we missed it. Sure. But I did kind of get in there at the end of it. Yeah. And I don't know. It looked like weren't they saying there were close to 1,000 people again?
Yeah, I think that's what Margaret said.
Yeah.
It's a big honking event, and it's the networking and the booths. I didn't get a chance to get around to all the booths. You end up talking to people, and but there were some interesting companies there that I hadn't seen before. I got an update on Hardcore Computer, the liquid cooled server, liquid cooled blade company.
Yep.
It's a fun event to get together. A lot of these people seems like I only see once a year at that thing, which is crazy.
I think overall the event had a much better vibe this year. It had a better vibe. It had a more high-tech vibe. And I think that during the course of the opening session and the weaving in of the clips from various politicos, state politicos, to talk about innovation and technology and its importance at this, for the state, and the STEM initiative and its importance to the state, I think MHTA did a fairly good job of positioning themselves as, this is what we do. This is we want to serve the tech community, but we want to do that through political action and education. So, I mean, that's what I got out of it. And I think overall the event was a better event, and it had Wi-Fi. So
it had Wi-Fi
and a hashtag. So.
Well, but here's the one thing that I keep coming back to, though, is the perhaps overemphasis on education and some of the fundamental stuff, because there needs to be, in my view, more focus on being a catalyst and an incubator for startup and innovation in Minnesota. So when I think about education, I don't think of just about kids and the STEM program and all of that. I also think about, let's raise the awareness of business leaders, of business analysts and corporations. Let's raise the awareness of people in Minnesota in terms of what's going on in the world relative to not just what's happening with the internet, but you know, material science and all of this. I mean, I'm seeing stuff like these carbon nanotune graphene paper. It's like stronger than steel, and it's flexible like paper. And all this stuff's happening in all of these different areas, and leaders in companies need to be educated on what's going on, and there's maybe not enough of that.
Well, I think it's because it's not in Anderson Kelleher's wheelhouse. I mean, she is a public sector person.
Yeah.
So I think you're gonna see a lot of public sector stuff, at least early on.
Yeah. I agree. And I think, you know, we've talked a little bit about this is the, you know, raising the banner to better education and secure funding for better STEM education or education in general is a much easier row to hoe than it is to come up with tax incentives and breaks and incentives for small business or, you know, especially in this political or in this economic climate. So I think it's probably, as Tim said, I think the first step for Margaret is to move down the path that she's very familiar with.
Yeah. Well, there was a couple of revelations that I had at this event. One was in the booth area, there was an organization called The Works, which is an engineering-focused thing for kids that is in Edina. I didn't even know it existed. So that was one thing that I stumbled across. And the other one was SOFIA, the organization that we're going to have on the podcast today. And you know, were there any others that you guys saw that were sort of jaw-dropping, that you thought, oh my gosh, I didn't even know these guys were here, or didn't know they existed?
I don't recall running into any that shocked me.
Okay. All right.
No, that's not necessarily why I was there.
Right,
I was really kind of looking to get the full, you know, find out where MHTA was headed and get a feel about that.
Right,
and that, I mean, that's right. I did walk away feeling like at least we're moving, and the MHTA seems to be moving in that right direction. Now let's, you know, and we talked with Margaret about, you know, we need to figure out ways to get people, you know, smaller organizations involved in MHTA, because it's a fairly cost prohibitive situation for the small organization to be involved.
Yeah,
I agree. You know, we still aren't hearing quite enough about that from them, but it's coming, I hope. There were a lot more startup community folks at the event, it seemed like, too.
Yeah, less ties this year, less ties.
And
it was a much less suit crowd.
Which is always good. Yeah, I mean, I'm not talking a huge number, but maybe there were 30, 40, 50 more folks that, you know, that were more startup community folks than there were last year, from what I kind of gathered.
That's great. Yeah. Well, go ahead, Phil.
I was just going to say, speaking of SOFIA, why don't we bring Taylor on, Taylor Pettis from SOFIA, at this point in time, Graham? I want to hear about the Dell Compellent Career Open House, because I know you were involved in that.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do that after we talk to Taylor. Since, you know, we don't want to keep him waiting, and we are talking SOFIA right now and MHTA. So let's get him online. We will do that.
I just want to mention that I met him when he was the STEM, the STEM product manager, education program manager with MHTA. And he reminded me of that when I was in the booth looking at Sophia. He said, you know, you and I have met. And I said, oh, yeah, okay. And so that was that was good. Well, so we'll bring him on right now. Good guy. A lot of energy about this.
And, you know, I know this is probably pointless to bring up, but I will bring it up anyway. Those as we throw around the STEM term, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
Yes, thank you so much. Hey, Taylor.
Hey, I'm here.
Steve Borsch and on with Tim Elliott, Graham Thickens, and Phil Wilson. How are you?
Hey, Taylor.
I'm doing fantastic.
Good. It was good seeing you at the MHTA fair. I guess you would call that room. That was sort of the fair.
It was outstanding seeing you guys, and I appreciated you guys stopping by our booth there and learning a little bit more about Sophia and inviting me to participate this morning.
Well, listen, let's talk a little bit about Sophia. Give us the quick overview of what Sophia is and what the goals are for Sophia.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I mean, before we jump into that, I think it's important to understand what's happening in the world of education. And, you know, really what's happening is the era of social education has begun. And when I say that, I mean that the next 10 years of social education will be a bigger disruptor than online education was in the last 10 years. And what that means is that when students are looking for help with their homework, they're not going to the textbook. They're going to text message their friends, they're going to YouTube, and they're going to Google. And we've found that there are over 3 million searches on academic topics every month on Google. And these are everything from biology to algebra to English composition. And so what Sophia is doing is it's working to meet students where they are by searching for help with their homework and studying for tests on the internet.
And yeah, but Taylor, aren't most of those searches from desperate parents trying to get up to speed on the new math?
it could be. And in a lot of ways, it probably is. When the student does go to the parent and say, "Ouch, help me with problem 54. I don't understand."
Right. Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
The linear equation model here, and how do I do this? And so, when they go to Google, they find oftentimes a lot of good content. But the thing is that on Google, there's also a lot of clutter. I know a lot of times when I do Google searches, there's, 14 pages of stuff, and some of it is very valuable. And other parts, I wonder, how did this pop up in my search? And so what Sophia has done is it's created a platform that is focused solely on education. So if a student is looking for help with Newton's second law of motion, they can go to Sophia and they can type that in, and they can find a variety of different lessons that are on Newton's second law of motion, or the teacher or the parent can actually find these lessons too to help out their own child. And these lessons include videos on Newton's second law of motion. They include PowerPoint presentations, podcasts. There's a variety of different formats that that students and parents and teachers can actually view these learning packets, and hopefully in a way that makes sense to them and that will help them cram for tomorrow's test.
So this sounds a lot like Khan Academy. Is Sophia inspired by that, or is it something different?
You know, it's a little bit different. I think that Sal Khan is doing some amazing things, and I think that there are a lot of other Sal Khans in the world who have created content and created YouTube videos to tutor relatives, cousins, nieces, nephews, but they're looking for a platform to host these lessons on, and that's really what Sophia is. So we are crowdsourcing content. So if you are a parent, a teacher, a student, a tutor, basically anybody can start to create a learning packet on Sophia. So if you feel you have something to share, you can post your lessons up there. Now, once the lesson is there, they're rated in two different ways. So the first way is just kind of a standard 5-star measure, which anybody that's familiar with the internet or Amazon or eBay, understands the more stars you have on your learning packet, the more stars you have on your profile, the better. The next way is that we have academic professionals that are part of the Sophia community that are rating lessons as well. And when they rate a lesson, if they can deem something that's academically credible, or they can also say, hey, this isn't really the way that I understand it. Can you cite the source, or can you give me a little additional background on it? And if something has a negative review, then the packet creator needs to resolve that, or is asked to resolve that before it can be proved academically sound and get a green check mark on the website that proves that that the packet or learning material is academically sound. And that's something where students and teachers will actually look for to see how a packet is rated and see if it's something they feel they can trust too.
Taylor, I have a question. This is Graham. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Yeah. Say, how was Sophia funded? I noticed on the About page that a good number of the folks, the CEO is from Capella University, but it's a .org. Is this a nonprofit? Is this a for-profit? And how was the business funded?
We are a for-profit. Capella did make an initial investment in the organization to help get us started here. And then we also do have licensed versions that are available. So if a school district or university or education institution is looking for specific features or really wants to bend the framework a little bit to customize it towards their students or their teachers, that is available also for sale.
Well, the one thing that really impressed me, Taylor, when you were giving me a demo, was the reputation management piece. So, Khan Academy, obviously Bill Gates is going on and on about Khan Academy and how it's going to revolutionize education and all of that. But the one thing that is not happening in Khan that I saw in Sophia is this reputation management thing. So if I love a specific author of content and I'm a student and I want to find other courses that this person has taught because I love their style, I love their voice, for whatever reason, their content is better, and they get voted up. And now I can begin to gravitate toward the best. And like you and I talked about, it's a real focus on the best teachers and the best content will bubble up to the top.
Yeah, and we've tried to create a lot of different incentives for people to participate as far as creating a Sophia score. Which is a score where you're graded on a curve compared to other users within the community. So the maximum score you can have is a 600. But one day you might log in and you might notice your score is a little higher than it was the day before. You might notice that you might have slumped down a little bit less depending on the activity that you've had on the site or the activity of others. So you're constantly being compared against other people within the community, and hopefully that is a way that encourages people to participate. And then similar to Foursquare, we also have a variety of different badges where they recognize different landmarks that you've achieved as part of the Sophia community. So you can receive badges for inviting your friends to use Sophia as well, or inviting your classroom for creating a learning packet or for rating a learning packet. So there's lots of different ways that are encouraging participation, but also helping users recognize people within the community who are more active or who are creating good content out there to be shared.
Yeah. Well, so here's the one thing that because I've been thinking a lot about Sophia. In fact, I've been thinking about it for other applications, wouldn't it be great if now that everybody has easy access to microphones and screencasting tools, wouldn't it be great to have a Sophia for small business learning? And so anybody that wanted to do a course on Google Apps, for business, could do a course on that, and have the same sort of thing. I mean, it really has a lot of application in a lot of different areas. But the one thing that I couldn't quite grasp is what's the overall incentive for people to build courses, whether it's the .org or even in a for-profit model.
I think that part of what has driven the social education movement is what we at Sophia are calling social disruption, and this is a phenomenon that started back in the early 2000s with from going to the internet to basically collect content. Now they go to the internet and have become content creators. And so we find that there's lots of people out there that are already creating content and looking for a place to house it. There are a lot of people like me where we have a blog, and I think my mom might be the only person that reads my blog, but yet I'm still willing to push that out there because I know that she reads it. And so in all honesty, I think that Sophia is teaching made easy, where teachers can start to connect with other teachers and benefit from the libraries that they're putting out there that they may not have known about prior to a platform like this. They can also share their content and start having their lessons be seen by teachers across the state, across the country, even across the world, and which I think provides something of self-satisfaction to be able to reach out to a lot more students other than what's just in your classroom or what you have face-to-face contact with a day. Students can also start to use virtual study groups and create packets for sharing content with each other. And so, what we're learning is that we've really become a generation of content creators. And I think the possibilities are endless once we just provide a platform for people to actually go out there and share their content, share lessons, and share things that excite them.
But K through 12 is the only market on the roadmap right now?
No, actually, right now we are actually focusing on what we would probably call sophomore to sophomore. So sophomore in high school to sophomore in college. We started with that focus just because we see that there's kind of some difficulty making the transition from high school to college sometimes. There's a large number of students that are needing help with that transition, and a large number of students that are taking remedial courses. And we're hoping that that Sophia will provide a community that can help support what they're learning in the classroom to help them with that transition. And ultimately, I think that focus could be anywhere from 10th grade all the way up to postdoc once we continue to grow. Issues as far as inviting people who are under the age of 13 to the community, just because there's we want to make sure that we're not inviting people to the internet that are too young to have a profile. But as we continue to grow, I think that the community will broaden to a variety of different education levels.
But as Steve was alluding to earlier, there's no current plan to take this to the non-educational sort of business learning or, non-institutional kind of space. You know what I mean?
I think that we actually could use this in business communities and towards retraining workers or towards businesses actually using Sophia as a training model for their employees or new hires, or creating video lessons for them, or training them on a new piece of software or technology that they're using. Absolutely. I think that that this could be for ongoing learners as well as people who are learning formally.
But that would be longer term kind of stuff. Hey, one quick final comment is your website looks great.
Thank you.
Some of that rub off on MHTA maybe?
I'm not sure if I should comment there, but no, thank you for the compliment. I think that it's something where we have received a lot of compliments too, and Sophia is actually the Greek word for wisdom, and kind of the inspiration of the logo as you'll notice is a laurel branch.
It's got that Greek thing going on, that Greek god going on. Yeah. I love it. And first when I hit the site, I thought, "Oh god, I hope this isn't Flash, but it works on my iPad."
Excellent.
Kudos.
It's well, thank you.
5, huh?
Well, Taylor, thank you so much for being on today and for giving us a little bit of a walkthrough of
Sophia. I was happy to share more, and thank you again for having me.
Absolutely.
Anytime.
All right.
Thanks, man.
Taylor.
Take care.
I just really like that platform and what they're doing. Obviously you want to make sure that it's, make sure there's a... You're always concerned about the accuracy of the facts that are presented on any site that's socially aggregated, but at the same time, it's I think a very exciting possibility.
Well, yeah. Except though that they, as he had mentioned, is they do have an academic review area or capability.
Yeah, I mean, the downside is it's separate from. I mean, it's not all the not all of the lessons are academically reviewed, at least at first. So you kind of are a little concerned about that, but. That said, you got to know what you're getting into when you go into it. I mean, it's the same sort of thing with Wikipedia. It's the same thing with a lot of things that you find online. You have to make sure that the facts are straight and cross-check them as well. So,
yep.
I think that's very important.
They sure do have a good-looking site, though. I mean, they've got some money behind this thing. I found the press release back in February that announced that Capella wasn't, you know, funding this thing. It doesn't say how much, but I got a feeling they got some pretty good resources behind them there because they sure built a first-class web presence here. One thing I thought was funny, I was clicking through all their links and I clicked on employment. And it comes up with a big fail graphic and I thought, oh, that's so education-ish. It was like a 404, you know. it's a big fail graphic. Anyway, that was sort of funny.
Well, so you know what amazes me about this is for a long time I've wondered about, you know, when the Minnesota Educational Computing Consortium was started. It was a state funded consortium to basically build computer software
back in the 80s.
It was back in the 80s. I was going to say 70s, yep.
I think it was late 70s, early 80s, maybe. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they built a lot of software for the Apple II. Mm-hmm. And then they became a corporation, and mainly they became a corporation because they were selling so much product that the state spun them off as a for-profit corporation. Mm-hmm. And there was a true leadership in that space for a very long time coming out of Minnesota. And when I was with Pioneer in the interactive Laserdisc days and CD-ROM days, it was the same sort of thing. The MEC conference was huge, and a lot of people looked at Minnesota as the leader in education. And so that's what's been kind of interesting from a technology standpoint. And that's what's been interesting about this is there needs to be more formalization and more acceleration with disseminating knowledge and training and learning on the web. And I think these guys are positioned to do quite well.
Oh, yeah. You bring up a great point. There is a real legacy for education and online education in Minnesota, and I have to mention Plato. Many years ago. I mean, they were well ahead of their time with that technology, and it still lives on. And there is a rich legacy here in this state, and this looks like a fine way to carry that on.
Yep. Well, hey, Graham, by the way, did you go to that Dell Compellent career open house?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did because I was helping them out as a consultant. And they had a huge turnout Friday all day long. I was over there a couple times at the Sofitel and again on Saturday morning for those who couldn't break away from work, I guess. And so, yeah, this company is on a tear. They are aggressively hiring now with Dell's deep pockets behind them, and Dell has an exciting new vision and growth strategy. There was a good piece in Forbes on Forbes.com, an interview of Michael Dell and how they've really transformed that company to really, you know, he's going after IBM is what he's doing. He wants to be an enterprise IT.
Yep.
You know, services company, and you know, they made something like 8 acquisitions last year, one of which was Compellent, announced just before the end of the year. And 4 of those companies, or 4 companies that they've acquired over the last 2 to 3 years, are data storage companies. So they have a grand new storage strategy going forward, and Compellent is right smack in the middle of that with their fluid data you know, platform, if you will. And so Phil Soren, the founder and CEO of Compellent, spoke Friday afternoon and speaks about how this is the most exciting storage startup out there now, Dell Compellent. Yep. And it was, you know, had a pretty big audience of folks there. And, you know, they're hiring something like, I don't know. Well, they're going to, he had gone on record as saying they would be hiring hundreds this year.
Really?
And he did say that since December, since the acquisition was announced, they've added 125 already. And they're now at 600 employees. You know, they,
how many of those are going to be here in Minnesota?
Most of them. In fact, really? I had a chat with the engineering folks cause I was helping them hire marketing folks, but they're also hiring sales and engineering. So they had all three functions represented at the event, meaning employees from Compellent were doing 2-hour shifts all day long. And then again on Saturday morning, and I talked to the engineering guys. They are really expanding. I mean, I forget how many positions they told me they had, like, I don't know, 100 or something. And I said, now, how many of those will be here versus down in Austin or Round Rock, I guess, is where Dell is headquartered. And they said, oh, they'll all be here. There's no current plans to have engineers down there. And, you know, my first thought was, where are they going to put them? But Phil said, you know, they're in two buildings already in Eden Prairie. And Phil said that they are expanding another 25,000 square feet. And, you know, it's a job to figure out where they're going to put these people. But apparently they're expanding in one of their existing buildings with some other tenants leaving or something.
Okay.
But they're hiring something like 15 to 20 marketing positions right away. And I think a similar number of sales. And it's all at compellentjobs.com. And I'm sure they're just buried in thousands of resumes right now.
I can imagine.
I don't envy that job.
That's great to see a local tech company hiring.
Yeah, it really is.
No kidding.
They, you know, it was a really, really upbeat affair.
Well, hey, guys, let's briefly talk about two huge things that happened this week. The first was Amazon's cloud computing infrastructure essentially crashing and burning down to the bare metal. Catastrophic failure. Well, I mean, really.
I get that's a visual there.
Oh, my
there
gosh.
Painting pictures, Steve Borsch. Painting pictures.
There you go. It's
melting
radio.
Metal.
Well, but when you think about what happened in all the companies, you know, Foursquare and Hootsuite and all Reddit and all these organizations that went offline.
Yep.
Well, I also, Steve Kickert's, now granted he sold it, but Steve Kickert's one place was also offline and on and on and on. I probably got 40 emails about, hey, we're offline, you know, blah, blah, blah. And some came from a Gmail account. One of them did because their mail servers were also on Amazon EC2.
Oh, geez.
So fortunately, they had a backup of their customer data and they were able to email all their customers. But it's like, oh, my gosh. You know, you start to think about the ramifications of that. Okay, so that happens. And then the whole thing with Apple collecting and sharing the iPhone location data inside a file in the iPhone and which gets onto your computer. And our Senator Al Franken sent a letter to Steve Jobs asking him questions about that he wants answers to relative to the privacy thing. So, I mean, does this
political opportunist?
Well, I would disagree.
they were in front of Congress a year ago explaining what they're doing. You know, it's like
I know, but this is a new thing. But so how can we? I mean, does this give you guys pause at all about betting your business or your personal data on the cloud? One thing I didn't talk about too was Dropbox, that being revealed that their API security and the security into the Dropbox is weak, to say the least, and that they also changed their terms of service to say that we will, even though they had always said we can't see your data because it's encrypted and we don't have the keys and don't, you know, if you lose the keys, your data's gone and so on and so forth. And now they're saying that they will hand over your data to law enforcement and that, oh, by the way, they have the keys. And so, you know, I mean, the level of trust that I know that has been being built up seems to be cut off at the knees. Are you guys seeing that?
Well, I think you're right. I think it's listen. Everything on the internet, at least as the way it has developed, has now become, there is a certain level of trust that has to be implied in whatever you engage in. There's no doubt about that. You have to be aware that what you post, what you do, what you spend time on the internet looking at is all trackable. You have to understand that first and foremost. Yeah. Now, the problem is that those things that we, as adopters of this medium, are counting on as it grows is that the more that we trust, the more that trust will be justified. And what's happening is we're finding that maybe that trust isn't as justified as we thought it once was. And I think it's healthy that we find these little bits of information about, you know, what's secure, what's not secure, because it will make the system better. But ultimately, it comes down to this level of trust.
Well, Steve, I'm going back to DOS 5 with an unconnected computer in my... bunker underneath the house.
Yeah. I got my bunker,
and I'm storing all my sensitive data only there. I encourage all listeners to also join me.
Are you wearing your tinfoil hat though? That's what I want to know.
I myself have files and files and files of stuff on paper. So,
and I've got this really old Nokia phone from the 90s that I'm going back to, where I don't believe they have any GPS or anything in it.
No Foursquare either.
Hopefully it still works.
Okay.
This has always been the danger of the cloud, is that if it goes down, it's a single source of failure. If it goes down,
yeah.
Or if it's insecure, that's a problem.
Well, the one thing that I don't know if you guys have done this, but after the fairly profound Gmail outage, I went ahead and fired up Apple Mail and basically sucked down all my emails into Apple Mail. And now I just run that. I have a calendar event and I just run that every other week and just download the new emails. So now I have an offline backup, which gets, of course, backed up to my Time Machine backup, which in turn gets backed up to the server at the office. And so...
Knee bone's connected to the leg bone.
That's right. But you know, it's we're doing the same thing in our business, which is ensuring that God forbid we have a fire in the office or Gmail inadvertently wipes out our Google Apps account or any of this stuff, that we've got some recourse to save our data, that our data is not just sitting out there and the latest version of our CRM is sitting in the cloud somewhere and we don't have a local backup.
But do you have your hardened CPM machine ready to fail over to?
No, but I do have, we did buy a 50 caliber World War II machine gun that we have sitting near the front door of our office. Yeah, I know. Look, I'm not being paranoid. All I'm saying is that there is so much faith and trust being put into this stuff. And yet at the same time, this was hilarious. I had a conversation with a guy about this whole iPhone, keeping the issue. And he goes, well, that's why I jailbreak my iPhone. I said, oh, really? Why? And he goes, because there's an app that you can stop any location data or ad following. And I
but
said,
it's triangulation on the towers. How do you do that?
No, but law enforcement can still get that. Yeah. But I said to him, I go, wait a minute, time out. You understand that when you jailbreak, that you're basically allowing the possibility of back doors into your iPhone, don't you? I mean, you don't know who's doing what in this. There's no checks and balance in this stuff. So,
well, do you think if you're really a bad guy, you're going to be using a smartphone anyway?
Oh, God, no. You'd go to Target and pay cash for a cheap phone
and you'd use a burner and that can't be traced as easily or pinpointed in location. So they have all these capabilities, and it just seems like innocent people will be unfortunately harassed by it.
Yeah.
As opposed to the really bad guys who aren't using this kind of stuff to begin with.
Well, I'm not talking just about bad guys though. It's also the company that was doing all the mailings for Best Buy and all these other retailers and big companies down in Dallas that had their data compromised and all these emails got out. It's that sort of trust that you know is constantly being compromised. I mean, you really need to know what's going on and who's doing what with what data. And it's not just being tinfoil hat paranoid stuff. It's about how do you bet your business on a cloud implementation, and you need to have a fail-safe, a failover of some kind.
Well, since today is Earth Day, maybe we should go back to our roots.
Which is?
Pen and paper.
You really?
Know, screw the cloud. Let's go back to pen and paper and books.
How we do that, it's still at our house. I don't know about you guys. It's not always, but yeah, we still use pen and paper.
Well, Tim, do you want to come to the Druid Festival next weekend?
That's getting back to my roots, literally. Coming from a long line of druids.
Yeah. Coming from a long line of druids.
Yes, exactly.
We go way, way back. Yeah.
Yeah. But what is Elliot, by the way? What's your ancestral lineage?
Mostly Scottish.
Okay.
Ah.
Hey, so we were thrown out of Scotland hundreds of years ago.
Okay.
Because they wouldn't use the cloud there.
Yeah, exactly.
We said no to the cloud in the Highlands.
Yeah.
In the Highlands.
I think it's one of those things is that we'll never, it's always going to come to light. We're always going to have to deal with it. And you just have to be smart about what you share, what you don't share, what you store and where you store it and how you back it up. It's that simple.
Yeah.
You have to use your head. It's not just about, oh, well, it's available, so it must be great. You have to use your head.
Yep.
Wow. Well, those are true words, Phil.
I know.
You have to use your head.
Brilliant. Don't you think? Brilliant. Well, I've always said the best privacy control is, you know, what you share. So you always have to be careful of what you share.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing I was going to say, I've heard Esther Dyson speak about this too, is that people don't read these privacy statements. I mean, they're crazy. They're legalese, you know, 4-point type, you know, these terms of service and privacy things. That's got to be simplified and made much more clear to people when they use these services, what is happening to my data. You know, there has to be a movement to simplify and so people can educate themselves more easily about what they're getting into and what they're doing online, and they can elect to opt out when they want to.
My favorite thing is on that, Graham?
What's that? Is
when you go to some of these sites and they have, you know, you agree to the terms and conditions, and the terms and conditions are displayed in a tiny box and you can see about 4 sentences.
Right.
And you got to scroll through the thing and there's like, you know, 5,000 sentences. like who's going to do that?
Exactly. No one does. Yeah. So that, you know, that kind of stuff has to change. And there are people working to change that, you know. And like I say, Esther Dyson has been a voice out there for this for actually quite a while.
Yep. Well, I will tell you that that we've bet our business on the cloud, and we continue to do that. And I encourage all of my clients to embrace Google Apps because of the things that they are trying to attempt to do to get engaged more with social media for their business and for themselves personally. And so, you know, there's no question that I'm throwing my lot in with the cloud and use these iOS devices and all of that stuff. But somebody mentioned the healthy word earlier. I think you did, Phil. And you know what? It really is healthy to have this discourse, to basically have people say, wait a minute. And then it came out yesterday that this whole location thing is so not specific to location. It's sort of generic location. You know, you're within a mile or two of some location. It's not, oh, I pulled up in front of, you know, like Randy Geist did. I sent out my iPhone scatter map of just Minnesota, all the places I've been since 2007, since I've had an iPhone, and tweeted it. And Randy Geist took that and added a little pointer, and it said Maggie's Sauna. Like, thanks,
Randy's
thanks,
got
Randy.
Too much time on his
it was pretty humorous. It was pretty humorous, but anyway. Well, hey, let's wrap by talking about what's coming up. Tonight is the Hacks and Hackers meetup, which I know I can't go to, but Graham, you're going to go.
Yeah.
It sounds pretty interesting. There seems to be more of this stuff going on, and so that's kind of cool. And then WordPress users group is...
Next Thursday,
okay, yep. At the Nerdery.
Yep.
And they have officially changed their name, right, from Sierra Bravo to the Nerdery?
They have, really?
I think they have, yeah.
They kind of have that dual branding thing going on, which is sort of weird, but... I think they
changed the name to the Nerdery.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
A good move, probably. One name is enough.
Yep.
I always tell clients, it's hard enough to get people to remember one name. Why the hell would you confuse them with two, you know?
Yeah. Well, and then on May 7th, Minibar. And unfortunately, at Mini Star, the parent of Mini Demo, Mini Bar, and whatever else they're doing, there's no link to the actual sessions page, the sessions.ministar.org.
Oh, really?
And so I'll put
maybe
that in the show notes.
They aren't in place yet, though.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, no, they're.
They're asking people to submit their sessions. So.
Oh, you can watch it in real time as it builds. You mean, or you're supposed to be able to?
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the agenda.
Yep.
But the link is broken?
No, they don't have a... now it's here. It says session creation and sign up is now open.
Okay.
So there is a link there now. So that's
good. But it'll take a while before that's final one.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
But I should also mention that I pinged Ben Edwards and Luke Francel yesterday and said, oh, by the way, I'm getting an application error when I try to go to ministar.org. And... basically been sent back. He said, oh, by the way, it's because we're on EC2, Amazon EC2. It's like, oh man, sorry.
Yeah.
So they were
rub
down.
It in, yeah.
Yeah. So is anything else happening that
you know, I was following along. There is a social media master's class that's being planned for the 7th of June. I know that Social Media Club is behind that. So information floating out about that. I'll try and get that link and put it in the show notes for everybody.
Great. Good, good, good. All right.
That's what I've got right now.
Well, thanks, gentlemen. And thanks for Taylor for being on when he was on. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Have a great weekend.
Sounds great.
You too. Have a great Easter, and we'll talk to you next on the Minivate Gang podcast.
Adios.